Welcome to Rage Game Network Podcast.
Welcome to Rage Game Network Podcast. I'm Andy.
Oh, I'm Sarah.
Hey, Purdue and Chris here.
And Ben.
Welcome back, guys.
Welcome back.
This is a short little episode.
A show after the show.
Yes, kind of a show after the show. You'll get this next week from when we talked about this was going to happen. But it's the same night for us, so.
If it's a mini episode, do we all have to speak like Chibi because it's shorter?
So in today's episode, it's so good.
I really have been dying to get a chibi shirt of like me choking out like Connor and him hitting me with a keyboard and laughing or something like that.
Actually, I kind of like this.
Okay. Never mind.
Anyways.
I'll save it.
Anyways.
So,
Ben never mind. I'm not going to save it. Sorry. Can I just, on the chibi thing, when we have babies, a chibi shirt is a must.
I want chibi shirts.
Chibi shirts in general, but chibis for babies.
Okay.
Okay.
I like that idea. It's settled.
Chibi Rage Game Network shirt. It's gotta be. It's gotta be done. So Ben, you were gonna pose a question to our pretty boy here.
Yeah. So, 2 weeks ago now, we did a impromptu one session. So it was Pose. We were going to do our normal campaign. For those of you who may remember, we started this off of the Halloween special last fall, going through the Curse of Strahd campaign. And we had originally set to do another night of that. And I believe Sarah mentioned that you had one of your best friends in from out of town.
Yeah, you guys have met Lizzie before on the podcast. She was here. Unfortunately, didn't get to record it with us because we had too many exciting things going on. But she was here. That was her first time playing D&D. And then we also were joined by Pretty Boy Chris, came back for D&D. And then Kat, who was sort of like the social glue from before everybody moved on with their lives.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because that's basically how Andy and I met, was through Kat's family.
Yep.
Kat and her fiance, Greg. Greg has played before, but not for a while, and Kat's never played. So they all came to do a one-shot with us.
Greg
never played Fate 5e.
Yeah, he has a Pathfinder background, and Chris has 3.5e background.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so long story short, I could not find a good way to write in one character in and out of Barovia, for those of you who are familiar with the setting. There's not a good way to do that without her character like straight up showing up and then potentially just dying off.
Right.
And I felt that was super rude to someone who's not only played in our group before, but like also new to D&D, to be like, oh, this is how you play. And now your character's dead because I'm never gonna see you again.
Bye.
Bye, Felicia.
And so I planned this one shot. Literally, and I think a lot of DMs do this, is you maybe go through your minis and just see what's a cool monster that I have not used because I hadn't had reason, and then let's plan a campaign around that. So I found a Herico Sphinx and a couple other things, and I was like, great, one shot, exploring a dungeon crawl. I'll go with this loosely like Egyptian explorer and throw something together, and then like 35 minutes before I'm ready to leave my house, Andy drops in the Discord, we're probably going to have a couple more people Chris is going to show, and Kat and her fiance are probably going to show up. So I was going to plan a one shot, which I thought was going to be Sarah, Andy, possibly Connor, because I wasn't 100% sure, and then their friend Lizzie. So I'm talking 3 to 4 players. And then with like 40 minutes notice, it's I need to have this adventure for 7 to 8 players.
So Ben's like, fuck.
Yeah. So like I plan to be like real nice, because like for those of you who remember at Halloween, I gifted the players your own set of dice. And I was like, oh, you know what? She's never played before. She's kind of interested in the hobby. I'll go to our local game store, support your local shops.
Hell
and
yeah.
Pick up a set of dice, and it'd be a fun thing. And then I'm like, I can't leave my house to go to GameStar now. I have to retool all these encounters.
Campaign.
God damn
Hold
it.
On, let me just add this.
Oh,
add
yeah.
That
yeah, I didn't get the notice until I texted you.
Yeah.
So basically, it was like, oh, yeah, so and so's deciding on coming. I'm like, oh, fuck. Ben's going to be scrambling
last second. Here's what happened is Kat had mentioned that she and Greg would be interested in coming and doing a D&D campaign with us. And I was like, okay, we usually meet at this time the week before. I mean, Kat's wedding at the end of the year. And the week before we had gone dress shopping and I had mentioned like, hey, you should come out. Our DM's really great, blah, blah, blah.
So you had a week ahead notice?
Of she might be coming. And then guess how much communication I got after the fact of whether or not she was actually going to come.
Well, and that was... And that was...
So she texted me.
I knew about Lizzie. So if you knew about the two of them, that it'd be easier to almost write in a whole adventuring party. And then reasonably have them go off on their own.
Right.
But anyways.
But she wasn't sure she was coming. So she texted me and I told you and then you texted Ben. Like it was
Yeah, it was all just spur of the moment. Yeah.
Don't worry. I got dragged in at some point.
So,
yeah.
All that to say,
seven people later.
As someone who is relatively new to 5th edition, what did you kind of like about what we did? What are your kind of takeaway of transitioning? Because did you play any D&D before this?
3.5.
Mm-hmm. 3.5.
All right, so like Sarah and Andy, you had that background of 3.5
yeah.
before coming in. So what was your... You know, what were your thoughts on that kind of like difference or things you liked as a player, or what did you like maybe in 3.5? Like what do you enjoy as a player?
I think what was kind of nice, I think we talked about this before, was there's a lot more, we don't have to roll for everything. I think in like 3.5, it seemed like you go on to go do something and then it'd be like, oh, I got to roll for this. I'm like,
yeah, it's super dice
heavy. Come on, like it just seems like I'm constantly rolling for stuff that maybe I could just discuss. I like that it has that little, some of that's been taken out, and you actually can be like, yeah, well, I'm going to do this, and you're just like, okay, yeah. You
explain how to do that to me.
Yeah, just explain how you're going to do it, and I'll just tell you, yay or nay,
basically. Yeah, yay or nay, or roll the dice, and depending on what it is, there's either maybe some degree of success, some degree of failure, or what.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of...
I think it speed that up, that whole process.
Yeah, there's a lot more of that DM discretion and trying to make this easy.
As a player, that was kind of nice that it kind of sped up the storyline.
Yeah.
Because I'm not constantly rolling and like going, really? Like, why do we got to roll for this?
Well, and I think it plays into really nicely to the fact, like everyone mentions how 5e is super heavy on roleplay, which is great because it gives you not like... You as a person aren't trying to interact with the person across the table. Like, your character is more easily able to interact with the person's character because you're not rolling. Like, you have an opportunity to actually, like, step into that person's mindset.
Yeah. And we did have a fair number of roles for different things.
We still have them.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still have them. Greg, it just is not as... stumbled upon them.
Yeah.
Greg was like, yeah, I'm just going to lean on this pillar right here.
And got poisoned. And
he's like,
I'm going to lean on this pillar right here. And Ben's like, cool. So the back of your leg is cutting open now. Like,
yeah.
Good job.
Good job, bud.
I think one of the big things, like you're saying, it's not as nitty gritty to dice rolls as 3.5 was.
It just seemed like it was consistent. If. I think a lot of that is because there's a lot more open to DM discretion.
Yes.
As opposed to like rule mechanically, it could have been that way previously. I had no experience before jumping into 5th edition.
Right.
But that's what a lot of people have kind of said, that it was more to a more gritty realism.
Yes.
You had more of that in some of the older editions.
It is.
Like, I know.
But it's also very grindy. And that's kind of why I like 5th edition. It flows better, and
it was almost like here, stop, roll. Here, stop, roll. Really, we're gonna do that's
oh yeah, and then just take a look at the skill list difference between 3.5 and 5e. It's like. Half your page on one side of your
skills
is all skills.
Yeah,
I remember skills, feats, and everything was like this one area where now this is a little more encompassing.
Yes.
Yeah, but look at the character. If you look at the character sheets for 5e, though, aren't they longer?
They're 2 pages. They're yes.
2 pages. Yeah.
But they're.
But it's like they've added a spot for you to like draw your character.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little more creativity. So it, I guess, and all
there's definitely more creativity when it comes behind 5e.
I think, and I know we kind of talked a little bit about it. What I really liked was the D&D Beyond app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think
God.
That was something that if I had that earlier in the earlier editions, I think that would have helped us out maybe a little bit more where I could track better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like
there's
that they
so
have
many
the dice
there's
roll
so
right
many
on here,
companion like, apps for 5th edition.
Yeah.
They've definitely tried to make it easier to get into.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think companion is the right word because like we've talked about D&D Beyond and like the fact that Connor and I have kind of replaced the use of the player's handbook with the app. But like it's still necessary to have those hard copy books in front of you because it's so much harder on a cell phone format to be flipping back and forth from one resource to the next.
Right.
But it does make it really nice when you've got your phone in your hand and you're looking at one thing and then you need something else, you just flip to that page in the book and then you have it all right in front of you. Like, and there's not 7 books open in front of you on the table and everybody's taking up 15 feet of space.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know?
But yeah, the one shot, just playing with 5e. No, it went really well. I really liked it. Everything else seemed pretty, like we talked about, pretty standard from what I dealt with before. So it was a good combination, I think, of like enemies to fight against, but also go in and explore. I think it was a good mixture in that little one shot there.
Yeah.
Good way to jump back in.
Yeah, it was a good way to jump back in, definitely.
Or jump into the game to begin with.
Yeah, especially for Lizzie there.
Oh my God, she had a fucking riot, you guys. She had so much fun. She's never played before. She came, she did shit hurt. So I ironically suggested that she be a bard because your girl is tone deaf. Like, she cannot sing, right? So I was like, you should be a bard just because. She's like, I'm going to be a tone deaf bard. It's going to be great. Yeah.
Which, in a one shot, especially for someone who's not playing, like, the bard is a double edged sword. It can be one of the more difficult classes because of the constant like action economy limiting factors. Like, a lot of their spells are concentration. Mm-hmm. You've got to remember to use your bardic inspiration. But on the other hand, for a new player, they have the most skills for out of combat things because of their their mechanical how they're built as a class, that for someone who's never played, you get to roll in social and puzzle things more than anyone else just because you have the most proficiencies and a couple of things of expertise. So it forces you to roll and understand, you know, maybe I'm asking you for a specific check for a specific reason and you have this.
Yeah.
And for story, it's great because bards inherently, their path is they went to the college of something. So you have a story, not only as a because you're a bard, but because you went to college, you have a story for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I know about Tiamat because I took my my abyssal religion class and I learned all about Tiamat and the different layers of hell. I know about I took an acrobatics. You know, I was on the cheer squad, so that's why I have proficiency in acrobatics. Nice. Well, you know,
and on the flip side of that, I think one of the harder classes, especially for a new player, besides like the generalization of spellcasters are kind of a pain in the ass. They are all have their own pain in the ass thing to do.
Unique flavors of magical confusion. Yeah.
But out of all the spellcasters, I really felt bad for Kat.
Yeah, she did. She played a druid. Genasi.
Oh, yeah.
A Genasi druid. And if you don't know how to play druids to begin with, they are very hard to play.
She did okay, though.
She did okay.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad there wasn't a lot for her character to shine sometimes.
Yeah.
But also we had 7 players and that's tough.
It's tough for anybody to stand out. But
she also wanted to use her wild shape and part of the kicker for druids is if you've seen said animal, you can transform into said animal up to, I think she was, we were level 5, so she had a CR rating of half.
Yeah, right? Something like that. Yeah, if you're not a moon druid, wild shape is... not super fun no. a lot mm-hmm. of the time.
It sounds fun until you get into all the like intricacies of where and when you can use yeah. it. Yeah.
And then she was trying to transform into the Bone Naga. And
she was like, I've seen that critter and now I can be it. And we're like, no, sorry.
Yeah. And like in retrospect, like there were cool things maybe you could have done. Like, oh, transform into a spider and like scout different areas that maybe wouldn't set off a pressure plate.
Oh, that, yeah, right. that would have been like very that. Cool.
But like,
yeah.
again, that's... There's stuff, like, I'm thinking of, like, oh, there's cool things that you could do, like, as the DM, but, like, I can't feed you the answer to the puzzle a lot of the time.
Right.
So, kind of like, when you were... So, I did... One of the puzzles was there's a room that had a whole bunch of vases. Each vase had a coin in it, and then there was a jeweled monkey a la Aladdin on a pillar. And one of the solutions to the puzzle was to pull the jewel out... And it would, you would incur a bunch of damage and other not great things, but then you would be free and you'd have this jewel.
Yes.
Or to otherwise solve the puzzle is to find the one vase that did not have a coin or something of value.
That was literal luck.
Yeah. Put something in it. And then instead of the jewel, you would get an even better prize, which you did end up figuring out. But like... I had no, there's nothing to do. It was like, all right, give me this roll. Give me this roll at a higher DC because you weren't sure what to do.
Right.
And admittedly, it was a very difficult, it was a difficult puzzle. Like, how would you figure out realistically what to
right.
do?
There's one coin in each jar except for one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, I couldn't like, find the empty one.
Where's the yeah. empty?
And it came down to, I'm just going to put something in one of them. So you figured out what the puzzle was, essentially, but you didn't know which one. And I just said, all right, roll me a percentile. And right. you got it. You lucked nailed out. It. I think it was like a 91. And in my sad head, I had said, all right, it needs to be above a 90. And you just made that hit work.
That was literally luck of the roll.
Yeah.
It was completely out of my hands at that point. So
it was a cool prize though. Did you talk about that on
No, I got the bottle of Ifrit.
Yeah.
Ifrit
which
bottle.
You didn't open.
No.
You were real close to opening that in that tiny little hallway.
No.
Bad idea.
Which could have gone real well or real poorly.
Yes. Not take the risk.
Yeah, so it was like a 33% chance or, you know, a third of a chance of...
Getting three wishes.
Getting three wishes.
Or having a fight with an angry Ifriti. Yeah.
And let's put it this way, that would have probably been our boss fight.
Yeah. The Ifriti was the same level, same challenge rating as what you faced in the end game.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but he's got so many different resistances, doesn't he?
Some here or there.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, I know probably melee.
Possibly. Most likely, I'd have to bring up the stat block. It's a large elemental, and it's they can wreck your shit.
Nonetheless, he can also fly.
Oh man, that was such a problem. I felt so when we did the Death House, and what did we fight? The Observer in the Death House.
Yeah, it was like a mini Beholder. Yeah,
yeah.
Spectator.
Spectator.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And it flew up, and Connor was like, "Well, shit," because he's literally like 2.5 feet tall.
He's barbarian. Yeah.
Right. So he's like, "Can't do anything now because it's like 10 feet above my head." Right. Like we fought the boss fight for this one shot, and it flew up, and I was like. Damn it. Because yeah. I was so used to having like, a bow and arrow. Yeah. And at this point, I had a rapier and I was like, I can't do anything.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. Finding out that.
Oh, okay. So just to preface, like, I had zero experience. I played a tiefling. I had zero mm-hmm. experience playing tieflings. And I was like, you know what? We're going to go for it.
Hold on. Tiefling rogue.
I was playing a tiefling rogue. Right.
So it had nothing to do with tieflings. It's about not understanding the rogue class.
It's more of like the rogue class, okay? But like, I thought tiefling was big, scary, like, brute strength, carry the heaviest object you could find, right?
No. Their base stats in the handbook are a plus to charisma and dex.
Yes.
Yeah. His character.
I did not pay close attention.
His character was a Goliath. Characters. His character was a Goliath, and that's what I think you were looking for.
I think that's what I was thinking of. So we get, I'm a tiefling rogue, we get into the thing, and they're like, what weapon do you have? And I said, I have a great club. And Andy was like, why?
Why?
You're a rogue. Your class is rogue. You have proficiency and dexterity.
I think you went with that rogue of like, oh, I'm a jack of car. I've got a crowbar.
Right.
Unfortunately, in D&D land, strength-based weapons do not work with your sneak attack.
Nope.
They don't work
with anything.
Nope. The thing about a great club is it is a two-handed weapon.
Yeah.
Right. And well, and it doesn't do nearly as much damage as if I had a weapon that I was...
No, you're just wielding a big-ass stick.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
Poor choices were made.
Overall, I mean, I had fun just in that one shot. I'd love to explore 5e a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, I really enjoyed creating that one shot. This is one of the first ones that I did truly from scratch, because Death House was a pre-done adventure. This,
right.
I loosely took, I found something on DM's Guild that had a map. I think I found a free map off of Reddit. I found a story connected with that from somebody's Twitter and Patreon that was free. And brilliant. I modified the basement and I added some other rooms and just kind of picked whatever elements to put together to be like, all right, what's a fun little one shot, you know, travel adventure, and at the end of the day, like a shit ton of magic items and stuff like that. And
right.
Just like make something interesting. And I love, like, I think my favorite thing for me as a DM was, so at one of the rooms, like any good dungeon, you have a lot of things that are just there just to be there. They're not a trap. They're not a hindrance. It's just like, sometimes it's just a dead end after a long set of trials. And so I hid this room at the top of the pyramid.
Yes.
And climbed up the staircase. And it's an empty room with a floating spectral eye. Now, for those of you who got that quickly, kudos for you listening. For those of you who didn't get that quickly, the imagery is an eye at the top of a pyramid.
Yeah, the all-seeing eye.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And it's observing the cosmos. Like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, as soon as you got it...
Like, I thought that would be kind of straight up, that like... And everyone was like, oh, this is spooky. Maybe this is the boss. Like, there's something to this.
Yeah.
And truly, when I designed it, I didn't expect it to do anything. It was literally just supposed to sit there, do nothing. You're supposed to wander about it and then realize there's nothing there and go away.
Yeah.
But then you were so invested. And I was like, all right, it looks at you, and you look at him, and he looks at you.
Yeah.
I was like, they're like staring into it. And then at that point, the evil DM kicks into me and says, all right, you're staring into it? Give me a wisdom save.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh no.
One of my favorite things about like being a DM and a player too is like that thought process of knowing when the DM is trying to get the party to just move and be like, okay, there's nothing really fucking in here.
So much time.
Yeah, you didn't let
it
go. At first it was like, all right. When the person like passed the wisdom save and was like because I didn't really have anything. They're like, if you want, you can willingly fail it. And I just made it up as go. Great. It's observing. So it goes into your mind and it observes your life.
What's going on? Yep. One of my favorite parts.
And then you were like, oh, this has got to be a puzzle. It needs to be someone specific.
Right.
Let's go,
and we kept
grab one of the mummies from downstairs. It has no eyes to look into this thing.
One of my favorite.
Kat was so mad. She was like, why are we doing this?
Yes.
We're just like,
one of my favorite things about that campaign, though, was the fact that, you know, oh, there's a bust in this room that looks like it's been broken off. And I put it in my backpack, and everybody's breaking my balls about it.
Like,
come on, guys. All right. My head, as you know, the DM player, is like, this is important. This is important.
See, and that was, again, I took so much of this from like other stuff. So you found the bust and then you found it broke apart and is in three pieces of a statue that's gilded and needs to be put back together. Any 90s kid who loved Nickelodeon, that is Legends of the Hidden Temple. That's
absolutely
the, that's
there.
The statue of the silver monkey, and you need to put it together.
Yep.
They all stack up, and you get a little prize.
Yay, I put it together, and everybody's like, oh, wow, you got it. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I figured shit out before you did.
Yep.
I was just thinking that would be a good one, the pot
thing definitely got me, though. It's like, oh, fuck. Man, if I can't get my perception rolls, I am completely fucked otherwise.
The other one that I loved was probably my last minute addition. Like that morning at work, I was talking with one of my coworkers. She's also a DM for another group.
Oh, nice.
And we were trying to, it's like, I don't know if I've got enough rooms in this dungeon. And I thought of another pop culture reference to throw in. And when I was like, oh, we're going to have more people, I need another puzzle. And it was the last thing I put in. It was one of the, well, actually both of the last two rooms that you got before the boss were last minute that me and my coworker came up with.
Oh, really?
Nice. And the second one you guys went into was great. So what I did is I placed a, and hopefully for listeners, you might catch this reference before the party does at the time. So you walk into a room, there's two stone tablets on the wall above a small altar that has a gold box. The stone tablets have a mage and a dragon. And then when they opened the gold box, they found a deck of cards and a small gold puzzle. So we're going to give everyone like a five to see if you can get this pop culture reference. One, two, three, four, five. Say it together. Yu-Gi-Oh. All right. Our party did not get this.
We didn't get it. It was the deck of many things. Yes. Don't open it.
Yeah, I freaked the fuck out. I'm like, oh my God, it's the deck of many things. We are fucked right now. So, and that was somebody's rude. Getting banished. Do not pull one
don't
of those
do anything.
Cards.
Well, so just, then at the end of the campaign, we got to the end and we're like, do you want to open up the deck now? Like, it's over. And yeah, we pulled the card out and Ben was like, congrats, it's a five of diamonds.
Yeah. So yeah, we had one of the players actually wanting to sit and they took their character took the time and assembled the puzzle. And I didn't think anyone would actually do anything with it. I thought, like they thought, that they might get freaked out that it was a powerful magical deck of things and then not do anything. But I was like, I'm going to assemble the puzzle. So I was like, oh, great. All right, it's going to be a medium DC because it is the Millennium Puzzle. And he passed the DC.
A child did it.
And I gave him a boon for the upcoming boss battle.
Right.
In the way that it was like, you hear a mystical disembodied voice give you a word of encouragement. Again, perfectly in canon to what would have happened.
Yeah.
That was really cool, actually.
Yeah.
We didn't get it, but I remember when we were thinking about that, we're like, no,
don't do it.
Don't do it. I remember when we were playing 3.5, we ran into the deck of many things and destroyed our campaign within 5 minutes.
Yep. I mean, anyone who's a fan of Critical Role knows that destroyed the ending of campaign one. I mean, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it's been years. If you don't know,
sorry.
Get with it. So, the end of the campaign, they found the deck of many things partway through. Travis's character, Grog, hadn't pulled it for a long time. Mm-hmm. He'd tried it early on, and then in their ending, it's their wrap-up. They've already finished the end, and they're just talking about what their characters did on the, you know, for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, 3 days after the final fight, I decide and I go pull a card out. And it's like his soul gets shunted to another plane of existence.
Yes. Yes.
So fans wanted to hear about what happened. Cause like this happened days after. This was not part of the years and years that everyone else did.
Yeah.
And now everyone else had to retcon their endings to be like, oh, we had to do this thing we could actually have our happy Ellie after under that we already had just talked about 5 minutes ago because he was one of the last ones to talk about his character. So they did a whole one shot of what happened like a week after what was the final battle of the campaign of going through the plane of pandemonium and experiencing, you know, growing levels of madness and exhaustion.
Oh, right.
So it's kind of call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, that's fucking insane.
That's wild.
Oh, I love D&D because, okay, as I watch a guy on YouTube, Matthew Colville.
Yep.
Okay.
And great guy. But he talked about, you know, the nitty gritties about the game recently, and he's like, you got to understand, when Gary Gygax made this game, he said it was to invent your own game. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
What we do at this table does not mean that you're going to be doing the same thing at your table.
No.
There are homebrew rules where, okay, I remember playing, if we rolled a D20 and we landed on a crit,
yeah,
a nat 20, that nat 20 automatically dealt twice of your single roll.
Yep. And we do this a little differently when we play, because I roll it for my DMing, because sometimes that doesn't, like, nothing sucks to, like, roll a one and have that doubled as a critical like that.
Right.
That
yeah, feels no, so that's disappointing. Bullshit.
So, like, I personally, when I run, I DM saying, all right, a critical hit is you automatically do max damage,
mm-hmm,
plus
one more,
a roll. Because okay, that to me, critical, so like, is above, should be an out above and beyond what,
yeah,
you, what can do. You can,
right,
do. That is that heroic moment of, you know, I go beyond plus ultra.
Yeah.
Like, and you go so
so like,
yeah,
so you do your max damage and then you go, yo, that's to go even further beyond.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So like if you're,
right,
rolling a D8, the minimum amount of damage that you can do is a 9.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and a good example is Nadpod and three black halflings. They do, you do two rolls.
Yep.
You do your attack, well, you get your attack roll, you do your damage plus your damage.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, you roll twice.
Twice. Yeah.
Oh, so like instead of if you roll a one and double it, if you roll a one, you get another roll. So you might,
yeah,
roll a one and an,
yeah,
8. Yeah.
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 Yes.
Yep. So that 9. Yeah.
Actually, the other table I play at, and we were talking about, so I also play in a campaign, and we met earlier, and last session I had a fun thing. So they do a session where a rule where anytime you hit a nat 1 or a nat 20, you then follow up by rolling a d30, and our DM has a set of possible boons and banes, depending, oh, on what it is. So if I roll, cool, a nat 20, I then will roll a d30, and on a 29 or 30, I get an extra boon. If I roll a nat 1 and then roll a 1 or 2 on the 30, I get some sort of bane. So last session, I was rolling killer. Today was not great. Last
session, today, no.
I had 2 nat 20s into 2 boons.
Oh,
so
my God.
The first was, we were facing some sort of creature, and my character used the Chill Touch cantrip.
Nice.
And I rolled a nat 20, okay, and then into a 30. And so he went on his table and went through. And now my character, homebrew, is anytime I use Chill Touch, while it does necrotic damage, it will ignore immunity to necrotic damage and treat it as resistance, so it's halved. And then if they're resistant, it completely ignores it and does normal damage.
Nice.
And then thing was, it was a history check on some stuff called Elverquist, which is an elven, it's a elven liquor of a fey background that you is made from these specialty fruits from someplace, and then is magically creating liquid sunlight to,
ooh. Ooh. Okay.
which is then distilled.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Fantasy crap. Yes,
yeah,
got it. Got it.
Fantasy bullshit. Yeah.
Gotcha. Perfect.
But I rolled a nat 20 in understanding what we had found, and then a 30 on that. And he's like, all right, anytime we have you make a history check related to elven culture, you can do so at advantage as if you treat it as if you were of elven heritage, even though my character's a Goliath and has lived in the mountains and would realistically not know that unless I had experienced elvish culture, which apparently is now part of my backstory.
Right. You've been literally living under a rock, but you know everything about elves.
But you know everything about elves, just because.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. I like it, but it kind of breaks the game a little bit, I guess.
It can. It depends. The campaign I'm in right now is really low magic, so having those extra things, I love it. I love it as a concept. It's not something I would bring to our table in the campaign we're running in Barovia because we have enough magic in a lot of magic in the world and magic item potential. But they're like, we just got our first usable magic items for our party this session. And we've been playing for like a year. We're level 8 now.
Oh my God.
We found a couple of spell books, which none of us are wizards, so we can't use. So I found a staff, and our Eldritch Knight got a mantle of spell resistance, which is a fancy cloak that grants her advantage on saving throws against spells. Which is dope.
Yeah.
But cool.
To have only found that besides healing potions
for a whole year.
The whole adventure.
Yeah.
So far.
That's crazy.
And we're like 2/3 through. Yeah.
Well,
this is super low.
I'll say this.
But it makes for cool moments.
Yeah.
With our campaign, with the Curse of Strahd campaign, I noticed that we got a good amount of our magic stuff at the beginning. We haven't gotten much since. But it keeps the game interesting.
We got a couple of things at the beginning, but then we also, like, I feel like a couple sessions in, maybe a month or two in, a couple sessions in, we all started, like, discovering our new abilities.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily, like, a magical item that we received.
It was
like,
a magical ability.
Yeah, and I think you all picked classes that had some magic, even, like... Connor found the only barbarian that had magic, so...
Right, you know, right. It kind of pulled a little off of my character's shoulders now that they have magic abilities.
More magic, yeah.
Thank God.
You and the smaller party to be the only person who wields magic.
Yeah.
And still, I feel it because the session before last, the session before last, yes, I ran out of spells.
Yeah.
I was out of spells at the beginning of the day.
For other people who have run or played it, it's a medium, sometimes low magic tier for the amount of items and stuff you get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of reliant on the party. But you get key magical things at different points,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, you were told at the beginning, like, there are three magical artifacts you need to find as part of your story. So you know, at least on the onset, there's at least three powerful things we're going to get along the way. I think that's nice incentive. And you guys are probably a little bit more magical than other parties I might choose to run through this. But you're a small party. There's only three of you.
Three of us. And
if it was a party of five or so, which is more based around the adventure, I might have been like a little stricter on the magic items I gave you guys in Death House.
Yeah.
Before going into this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But also, you know, you gotta then balance stuff out. And if I give you some magic to make you guys a little bit stronger, that gives me less work right now on having to lower encounters if they already just meet you. So
So
there's either I can balance it out by giving you more magic, or I can make the encounter stronger, or I can make it weaker. And I think I found a nice medium by setting you guys up early. You felt real powerful, you know, as you're coming into this, and then go kind of slowly realize, like, all right, We're pretty powerful by adventure standards going in, but then we're still in something above our knowledge. Yeah. Like, the fuck's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Right. What we are? I know we last left off.
And a cliffhanger.
Vampire spawns.
What, 3 weeks since we played?
Yeah.
And I have already calculated what I'm going to do from that point on. I have a special ability that'll help.
You're staring down at a warehouse that has some vampire spawns in it.
And that's there's one right open window.
Yep.
A single open window.
Yeah, but it might help a lot.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We gotta do it.
Unless I can run around in daylight, but I kind of doubt that.
We'll find out.
Yeah. We'll find out, especially if they don't pass their wisdom saves.
Yeah.
I have turn undead.
That's a powerful thing for a cleric.
It very much is. But
they're in that range.
But one of my favorite things about the end of that is I gave Connor a +1 to his AC by using protection of something or other.
If you gave him protection from evil and good, it's actually have a disadvantage against him.
If you gave him
Shield of Faith, it's a +2 to AC.
Shield of Faith. I gave him +2, and then he did something to with his rage that popped off a magical ability, and
he's gotten real lucky. I don't think we've seen any of them twice yet.
There's only eight,
and we've seen four.
There was Iron Man Blast the first time we saw it. The second time was, I think this might just be the.
This might be the fourth time. Because then he's got the tendrily thingies.
Tendrils, when we were fighting the fiend. Yeah. And I don't know that we've seen anything else.
I thought we saw one other one.
When we were fighting the wolves, that was the Iron Man, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was right after the dream, so that was absolutely the first one.
Yeah.
But this one just gave him, me, and Sarah a +1 to AC.
Yeah, so I think that's the close one,
He just jumped from an AC of 14 to 17. I'm like, dude, you are going to be the motherfucking tank this round.
Yeah.
Oh, so I, like, off tangent, and probably, like, last thing, I know we were keeping this one short. So on that barbarian, I saw a funny meme, and I shared this with my other party, that... You know, for as badass as barbarians are, they're just the magical girls of D&D because rage is just a transformation sequence that makes you stronger against certain attacks.
Yes.
And I'll leave y'all with that thought.
They're the Sailor Moons of
D&D. Yeah.
That's good.
They're like Sailor Moons or the, you know, the Power Ranger Super Sentai.
Yes.
Nice.
Remember to visit the website, ragegamenetwork.com. Get yourself a t-shirt. Like us, subscribe, follow us on whatever social media platforms that we have. Come to our Discord and put down a chit chat with us. You know, we have different channels on our Discord, like D&D. Hey, memes. We got memes. And just be nice. And stuff like that. But if you rage it, we game it.
Bye.
Bye.